The Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee will now come to order. Members, please note Chair Tomko and Representative Stevenson are excused. Will the Administrative Assistant Adrian please call the roll?
Chair Tomko, excused. Vice Chair Bishada Cabrera?
Here.
Representative Botano?
Here.
Brannon?
Here.
Buchanan?
Here.
Chambliss?
Here.
Clemens?
Here.
Fabricio? McClure? Morales?
Present.
Ranking Member Umfroy?
Present.
Representative Roth?
Here.
Representative Stevens, excused. Representative Tant? We have a quorum, ma'am.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent. If members of the public wishing to address the subcommittee will please fill out an appearance form and give it to the committee administrative assistant so we will know your interest in addressing the subcommittee. Members, we have two items on the agenda today. First, we have a presentation by the Department of Environmental Protection on the Resilient Florida program. Then we will take up our consent agenda. Are there any questions? Moving on to our presentation, today we have Mr. Adam Blaylock, Deputy Secretary for Ecosystems Restoration with the Department of Environmental Protection, to give us an update on the new Resilient Florida program. Before Mr. Blaylock begins, I would just like to mention that this is the program that was Speaker Sprouls' priority last session, HB 7019, and the department was required to submit a statewide flooding and sea level rise plan by December 1st, 2021, so we are very excited to hear about it. The plan consists of ranked projects that address risks of flooding and sea level rise to coastal and inland communities in the state and is included in our meeting packet. Members, please hold all questions until Mr. Blaylock has finished his presentation. Mr. Blaylock, you are recognized.
It's good to be here. For those of you who listened to the presentation yesterday, you get a double dose. So, and I just wanted also for those not on that committee to introduce you to Alex Reed. She's the director of our Office of Resiliency and Coastal Protection, and she had the large role of getting this program stood up and analyzing, reviewing all the submittals, and her and her staff did a lot of good and hard work in getting all this put together so we could get it submitted to you. And I'm happy to be here to be able to go over the results of the report, that the resiliency plan that we submitted in December. Just to start off, last session, Senate Bill 1954 established the Resilient Florida Program. This is just an excerpt of the legislative intent. The program was created out of the recognition of the needs of our communities to address flooding and sea level rise. The program directly addresses the threats to these communities from severe storm events, rising seas, and storm surge. Before getting into the statewide flooding and sea level rise resiliency plan, I just wanted to briefly kind of go through some of the funding that the legislature appropriated last year related to resiliency. There was $20 million in state funding specific for the planning grants, $2 million that went to regional resilience entities to assist some of the communities in developing their planning vulnerability assessments, and then $500 million that went to the, out of the federal ARPA funding that went to the Resilient Florida grant program. And just to touch a little bit on the $20 million for the planning grants, the primary purpose of those grants is to assist local governments in developing their vulnerability assessments, which are kind of the foundation for establishing the statewide data set that will then go into doing our statewide assessment of the impacts of sea level rise and flooding, which will then to be the cornerstone of identifying projects in future years for submittal into the plan. We had, out of that $20 million, 191 applications were received, totaling just over $90 million. So definitely a lot of local governments taking advantage and seeking assistance to be able to do those vulnerability assessments. There's a lot of data and research and analysis that goes into doing those to identify critical assets and the sea level rise and flooding impacts based on some of the sea level rise projection curves. So to get right to the statewide flooding and sea level rise resiliency plan, these are type of projects that qualify for funding under the plan. There's transportation assets and evacuation routes, wastewater, stormwater, other utility infrastructure, critical community and emergency facilities, and natural, cultural, and historical resources. And so the department, we opened up a portal to solicit projects to get submitted to us for review. And under the statute, those projects from local governments or ones that address the risks of flooding or sea level rise identified in existing vulnerability assessments. And then also from water management districts and flood control districts of projects that mitigate the risks of flooding and sea level rise on our water supplies and water resources. Those applications had to come with a 50% match unless you are from a financially disadvantaged community. Some of the ineligible expenses or type of projects that the statute specifically provided that wouldn't be eligible for funding are things that are strictly like aesthetic, vegetation, recreational structures such as piers, docks, and boardwalks, water quality components of stormwater and wastewater management systems, maintenance and repair of walkovers, park activities and facilities, except expenses to control flooding or erosion, navigation, construction, operation, and maintenance activities, and projects that provide only recreational benefits. So if we had projects that were submitted that had any of those, then those type of activities were ineligible. So the department, we opened our portal on July 1, and it was open until September 1st. That was the date in statute that local governments and water management districts and flood control districts had to submit projects to the department. And then we submitted the statewide sea level rise flooding resiliency plan on December 1st. That plan is a three-year rolling plan that establishes projects to be funded each year for 3 years. And then once a project will roll off in subsequent years as we receive additional projects. So it just continues to be a rolling plan of projects for funding. We received 384 projects for inclusion in the plan that totaled roughly $2.25 billion. Those were evaluated for eligibility, as were described in the last slide, and of those 275 projects totaled $1.77 billion were qualified and were eligible to then be ranked as part of the plan. So the statute, it sets out the different tiers for giving ranking and scoring for each of the projects. So we went through all of the projects that qualified and did a score and rank list based on these criteria. The tier one projects got 40% of the scoring, and that was if the project addressed risk to critical assets and regionally significant assets, as well as existing efforts to reduce upland costs. Tier two received 30%, and that was to look at projects that got extra score if it was existing flooding conditions, readiness to proceed, if there's environmental options, and exceeding the minimum requirements. And then tier three looked at additional, any local match, previous commitments. And then tier four, 10% of the score went to innovation to reduce costs, regional collaboration, and then financially disadvantaged communities. In the statute, it requires that the plan that we submit to the legislature provide a description of each of the projects, the location, an estimate of how long the project will take to complete, estimate of the cost of the project, the cost share percentage, a summary of the scoring assigned to the project, and then the project sponsor. This first plan, we scored and ranked and funded 76 projects for a grand total of $270.8 million over the 3 years. So year one will fund approximately $99.6 million, year two $113 million, and then year three $58 million as projects that are, some are multi-year, some single year, so as ones roll off, that's why in year three you see less funding, but then as we get additional projects submitted in subsequent years. Those will get added to the list to make sure that we're funding the amount of projects equal to the dollar amount in the trust fund. So to kind of better understand the projects proposed for funding, I want to briefly talk about the type of projects that this funding helps bring to fruition, including living shorelines, stormwater management projects, and retrofits for utilities and other assets. Basically, living shorelines are natural and nature-based shoreline stabilization that combat erosion, dampen incoming wave action and surge, provide vital habitat for coastal marine species, and provide natural filtration of runoff and resedimentation along shorelines in order for the coast to better adapt to rising sea level. The stormwater management systems, they're designed to address flooding caused by rainfall that further exacerbated by rising seas and flooding and rainfall events. Stormwater management includes improvements to roads, pumps, lift stations, culverts, stormwater system capacity upgrades. One example of this is the Alapata Flood Improvement Project in the city of Miami, which will protect residential properties, including low-income housing and two rail stations. So as you can imagine, as you're looking at increased rainfall, flooding, rising sea levels, dealing with stormwater, particularly in South Florida, is one of where there was a significant amount of need and projects that were submitted through this first round of submissions. And then also we had new or retrofits to critical facilities, including hardening structures against damage from flooding, relocation, demolition, rebuild, and new facilities. These retrofits to utilities include work such as raising generators and fuel tanks and electrical and HVAC equipment. One example that was on the list is the Miami-Dade County's retrofit at the Integrated Command and Communications Center. So this just kind of breaks out the percentages of the different types of projects that we had submitted through our solicitation. As you see, about 46% were related to stormwater management, 26% to living shorelines, 20% to new or retrofit of critical facilities, 7% for seawall structures, and then 1% for elevation of existing structures. And also just to, as an update on, well, we had the 408, it was 500 million and then 408 million of projects under the federal ARPA funding that we're looking to be announcing in the very near future. And so that will be an additional list of projects that we'll be able to have funding allocated to as well. So that's my overview of the plan. I'm happy to take any questions, and any questions I can't answer, I'll have Alex here answer for me.
Thank you, Mr. Blaylock, for that presentation, and I might be a little biased, but I think it was on a fantastic bill, and we're excited to see the speaker's priority take effect. So thank you for all your hard work. Members, are there any questions? Representative Chambliss, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to go back to the term financially disadvantaged community. Sure. And just, you know, for clarification's purpose, what's the equation there? Like, how was that determined?
Deputy Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And so I'll just kind of pull out of the statute what it said that those are. And it's basically a municipality that has a population of 10,000 or fewer, of the population, a county that has a population of 50,000 or fewer, and the per capita annual income that is less than the state's per capita income, as shown in the most recent release from the Bureau of the Census from the Department of U.S. Department of Commerce.
Members, any other questions? Representative Chambliss.
Madam Chair, I have three in all.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Sir, number two, just wanted to, that time frame of July 1st to September 1st to submit potential projects, is that going to be every year as the time frame of submission?
Deputy Secretary?
Yeah, the statute lays out the process, and it's September 1st is the deadline for the water management districts, local governments to submit projects.
Representative, follow-up?
Yes, ma'am, last one, and thank you, Madam Chair. And just for clarification purposes, as the role in which this department will play, if you could, from a reactionary department to a department that kind of like thinks ahead of issues happening, in my mind, I think of FEMA, right? Like FEMA is an emergency response national department, right? Could you clarify the difference between the Office of Resiliency and, say, FEMA as it addresses these type issues?
Deputy Secretary?
And you know, the primary purpose of this grant program is to look not only where we're already seeing impacts of sea level rise and flooding, particularly as you're looking in Miami area, Keys area, where you're seeing with the King Tides flooding, but then also looking at future out 20, 40 years so that local governments can deal and address with existing issues, but then also be planning for the future, knowing that a lot of these projects and funding are going to take time to get designed and permitted and developed. So that's, I think, kind of both looking near term and long term.
Did you have a follow up?
No.
Representative Roth?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. This is our first look at this three-year plan, so I have a couple of questions, if that's okay, Chair, for this. You did mention that there was $270.8 million over 3 years. So when I think of this kind of thing, this kind of plan, I think of the FDOT model, five-year plan, and you got a submittal process, and you got an approval process, and all that kind of stuff. If you could give us a little more detail on that, would be my first question on how that process works. And so we do have a three-year plan, basically, is how we're going to do it?
Deputy Secretary?
Yes, sir. It'll be. So we provided a list of projects that will be funded, some 1 year, some are 2 year, 3 year, and some even more. And so we funded out the number of projects for 3 years. And as projects go off each year, we will, the maximum right now anyway in statute is $100 million. So we'll make sure that for each year, there would be at least up to $100 million, as there's more money that may be. It's based on the dock stamp change from last year. So you know, that number could change based on future legislative. But right now, just based on the statute, it's kind of a rolling three-year plan, and we would continue funding up to $100 million each year for on a rolling basis.
Right. Representative Roth, follow-up?
Yes. Thank you. So obviously, We like to think that this is going to be run in a conservative way where we're not trying to spend money, we're trying to meet goals and fix problems and do this in a understandable way so that the cities and counties get a better understanding of how this process works, because obviously it's a new process. So my next question is just kind of a general idea, looking at this pie chart on page 10, could you divide it simply as coastal versus, you know, not coastal, maybe inland? And then maybe secondly, could you divide it, you know, what percentage of it is water management districts? Because you had local governments, county governments, and then water management district. Could you give us a little breakdown on how that of this 3 year dollar amount, how that's broken down?
Yeah, I don't have this, Chair. Sorry.
Deputy Secretary, go ahead.
I don't have the specific
right,
which I can provide for you, but in general, there was a few water management districts, but the vast majority were local government. And what was the other breakdown?
Another question was, of the $270.8 million, how would you divide them? Like, can you give us kind of an idea percentage-wise, in general, coastal versus non-coastal?
Yeah, the vast majority, again, was in coastal areas. There was some inland projects. I know there was a couple in the Polk County area looking at some of the flooding impacts along the Peace River, I believe. But, yeah, on this first plan, there it's primarily in coastal areas with a few inland as well.
Members, any other questions? Representative Omfor, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Deputy Secretary. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. My question is in regards to how Is the agency looking at policies to fund that will look at how we can start dealing with the root issue of the problem? Have we looked into maybe special programs or maybe even pushing out some kind of a pilot or a contest to see how maybe we can solve some of these issues before we, I mean, we're doing amazing with the amount of people who have responded to what the speaker has put into place and has passed and the governor supported. But have we looked at maybe thinking outside the box to solve some of these problems by getting Floridians and maybe people from across this country and the world to figure out or help us come up with solutions to the things that are on our plate?
Deputy Secretary.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, it's a huge issue when you're looking at climate change and sea level rise. And I think one of the things that we know for sure is whether or not, I mean, you could eliminate all carbon output today and there would still be sea level rise and still be impacts to our coastal communities. And so I think the real kind of purpose of this is recognizing that and making sure that we're planning for the future, but also addressing existing and ongoing needs and impacts that we're seeing right now. But yeah, as we're looking forward and, you know, they're open to any different avenues that can be done to address these impacts.
Members, any other questions? Follow-up, Representative Omfoy.
Thank you so very much, Chair. So are we open to having conversations in reference to maybe looking at funding or projects that can, let's say someone came up with an idea of how to create a way to take out some emissions out of the air. Would the state of Florida look at that in regards to their resiliency funding if it fits certain criteria?
I think the Deputy Secretary is going towards the presentation today, specifically on the resiliency package. But if you know, want to discuss anything beyond that, that you can, go ahead, Deputy Secretary.
Thank you, Chair. And yeah, I mean, right now, looking at this plan and what the statute is directing the department to look at is specific for resiliency projects, but you know, open to looking at other issues as well.
One more follow-up.
Thank you very much, Chair. So if there was a resiliency project that focused in on reducing something, then the state would be open to look at it under these terms?
Deputy Secretary?
Potentially, I just have to be able to see the specific project to really understand whether it would fit the criteria for funding, but you know, it's possible. It's just hard to say without knowing what the specific project would be.
Members, any other questions on the resiliency project? Representative Omfroy?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for going on that journey with me. I just needed to know if it was a possibility. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Tant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to say thank you for the work you're doing. I think it's incredibly important, and I think you guys have done a great job. I really love the fact that we're talking about resiliency. My question is, in the course of your work on resiliency, are you finding ways that we can prevent further, you know, maybe future problems, and are we doing anything about pursuing those things? I'm just curious. I don't know what I don't know, so I'm just asking this question out of my own curiosity. Thank you.
Deputy Secretary?
Yeah, and I know one of the main things is, you know, data assessment and trying to understand and see what the best available data is. In a couple months, NOAA is going to be putting out their updated sea level rise projections, and so as we continue to get additional information, that helps guide us on, you know, responding to potential, what those future impacts may be, and looking at, you know, flooding and sea level rise, and as you're looking at storm surge and things like that, and the king tides, looking at different ways that we can try to address that, because as you're, you know, you can upgrade and increase capacity in local basins for their stormwater systems, but then those eventually flow into bigger canals that then flow into the ocean, and as the ocean is coming in, if you don't have the pumps to get the water out, so trying to know what those kind of dynamics are, and a lot of that is something that we'll continue to be researching and collecting data on.
Any other questions, members? Representative Brannon, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is this. I live in an inland county, but I guess I'm blessed that I also have a place in St. John's County at the beach. And they just completed a large, I guess, a joint Army Corps state beach renourishment project. I mean, probably finished in the spring. Nice big wide dunes, sea oats planted. We had a nor'easter. Half of it's gone. You literally have to have a 12-foot ladder because instead of the dune being like this, it's just chopped off. So it's worse than it was before. Is there any money held back to correct problems like this that I don't know what kind of planning went into that project, but it was, I just walk out there. I went out there this weekend, the first time I really had a chance to look at it. Just I mean, nobody can help it, but I wonder, do they have to back up and punt now, and that's a whole new project, or is there money held back to try to fix or can go back in and fix these things that are failures that obviously didn't work because it's just millions of dollars spent there in the Volano Beach area from the bay there going back north toward Ponte Vedra Beach. I don't know, there's 6 miles of it, I think. And it's just gone.
Deputy Secretary.
It was not a hurricane, it was a nor'easter. So I'm thinking what went into that and that money, are there any reserves to go back or you just start all over?
Deputy Secretary.
And I'm not familiar with that specific beach renourishment project, but as beach renourishment is done and then there's a continual and additional impacts, it would be an additional project to then, you know, renourish. I think some of the resiliency funding with some of the living shorelines and creating some of the natural buffers to try to reduce some of the wave action and things are options that can be looked at. But just strictly speaking from a beach renourishment or a beach nourishment project, as one occurs and you get instances where you have a nor'easter or something where it gets eroded, then as it becomes designated as critically eroded again, then being back in the beach nourishment, beach management application pool. But I can meet with you after as well. Alex, she also oversees the beaches program, and we'd be happy to get some additional information and kind of see what solutions might be there.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Seeing no other questions, thank you so much, Deputy Secretary, for your presentation.
Great. Thank you very much.
Members, we are about to take up the consent agenda for appropriation project bills. We will take up the consent agenda and vote once on the agenda in its entirety. The public is welcome to testify on any of the bills listed on the consent agenda. Members, we will not take up question, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, we will be in questions and debate only once. Remember, you may vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with the administrative assistant before the vote. Members, in your packet, there is a list of the appropriation project bills. With that said, are there any questions? Any public testimony? Rosanna Catalano, the City of Key Colony Beach, waving in support on 2057. Jordan Connors, City of Pahokee, waving in support on 2557. Mark Anderson, Nassau County, waving in support on 3051. Mark Anderson, Nassau County, waving in support on 3157. Garrett Wallace, the Nature Conservancy, waving in support on 3383. Julia Juarez, waving in support on 3677. Julia Juarez, waving in support, Village of Estero, 3957. Clayton Ferreira, Ideas for Us, proponent on 4103. Thomas Hobbs, City of Daytona Beach, waving in support, HB 4211. Chad Wisdom, proponent, 9155 from Cedar Key Water and Sewer District. Alan Hart, from representing BDI, proponent on HB 9155. Travis Wade, representing City of Apalachicola, proponent on HB 9321. Alan Hart, representing BDI, proponent for HB 9321. Ashley Schilling, proponent on HB 9393. Laura Edwards, City of Sopchoppy, proponent on HB 9393. Alan Hart, proponent representing BDI, HB 9393. Is there any debate? Before I call the vote on the consent agenda, are there any nay vote forms? Remember, a yes vote signifies an affirmative vote for every bill on the consent agenda. Adrian, will you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Chair Tomko? Vice Chair Bouchard Cabrera?
Yes.
Representative Botano?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Stevenson? Excuse. Tant?
Yes.
Favorable, ma'am.
Members, by your vote, all of the bills on the consent agenda will be reported favorably. This concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative McClure moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.